The Chiefs are undefeated no more, and Bo Nix lets his voice finally be heard. I'm Adam Wright, and this is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright, joined by CJ Medeiros and Chris Kostich. We have a great show planned for you tonight, and week 11 was quite the week. I mean, so much happened. There were so many topics that we just had to scrap because there was just so much to talk about. But overall, big week. As I teased before we started the show, Bo Nix has finally showed out. I mean, he's been playing steadily very good football this season, but with the way that he's been playing so far, with how he played this past Sunday against the Falcons, we'll get to that very soon. But we're going to start off with the Chiefs, who are now 9-1. They are no longer undefeated. And this was a pretty entertaining game, top two. I mean, Chiefs versus Bills is always very entertaining. Most of the games are very competitive. It's very rare that one side blows out the other. It's usually a competitive game. And this one didn't really disappoint. the Chiefs did take the lead once, but overall, it was a one-score game for most of the game. The Chiefs only led for a little bit of time, but overall, Mahomes threw two picks. Allen threw one. It wasn't the cleanest game. If you give it the eye test, Josh Allen definitely played a little better than Mahomes did, but Mahomes threw for three touchdown passes. And if you look at the rest of the schedule for the Chiefs, some of it is still very beatable. They have the Panthers coming up. They have the Raiders. They have the Browns. But on another hand, you have games against the Chargers. You have the Texans. You have the Steelers, who have proven to be a tougher out than we've all thought. And we have the Broncos, who similarly are a tough team to beat. You just barely beat them a couple weeks ago, where you missed the other side missed a chip shot field goal. I mean, listen, the floodgates could end up opening in the latter half of this season for the Chiefs. Once you lose one, you've been at the point where you don't know how to lose games. Once you lose that one, then the floodgates start to open and they just come left and right. And there's a lot of games that they could lose in this part of the season. There's games that, yes, they should win, but, you know, any given Sunday, what if the Browns and Jameis Winston actually show up? What if the Raiders have themselves some sort of game where they play up to competition, right? Like, things like that happen. So when you look at winnable games on your schedule where you're supposed to win, you can't always count your chickens before they hatch, especially with a vulnerable team like the Chiefs here. And I just want to ask, overall, how are we feeling about this Chiefs team going forward and in the playoffs?
Well, I can tell you this much. History shows that they won't win the Super Bowl. So the last undefeated team since 2000, the last undefeated team in the regular season has only won the Super Bowl once. Here's a little trivia. If you guys can guess who that one team is, take a wild guess.
Hold up. Was this in the 2000s or not?
2000s. I said, yep.
Colts?
Yeah. Yeah. The 06 Colts. Mm. What a pull. What a pull. But yeah, so, yeah, if you're thinking about how the Chiefs are going to go for the three-peat, history has shown that it's most likely not going to happen. It's been more prevalent since pre-2000. But since 2000, it's only happened once. But in terms of the Chiefs, I mean, I could kind of see this boiling down to how the Pats team was the last year that Brady was around, it's most similar to that Pats team where you knew that it was only going to take one game for you to realize, yeah, this is not going to be the greatest year in the world. And if they end up making a big run, then they'll be lucky. But, and that was the thing with the Pats. They did not have a great team that year, and they had a lot of flaws. Of course, they had some really shitty targets, Mohamed Sanu being one of them. But what are you going to do? It all comes down to one loss, and this is the one loss for the Chiefs. However, it wasn't the worst loss in the world. They made it a very competitive game for throughout the entirety of it up until the last 2 minutes, where Josh Allen on 4th and 2 was rumbling and bumbling and stumbling into the end zone. That was an awesome run. Awesome run. That was the epitome of a Josh Allen run. But
that was insane. Insane
run. In terms of the schedule, I could see the Chiefs bouncing back and winning the next two. I mean, Panthers, you never know, could be a scary one, but I could see them bouncing back the next two. But Chargers, I could most definitely see them losing to the Chargers. The Texans, Texans are a little weird. They're not as explosive as last year. That's going to be a very, very down to the wire coin flip type of game. But I could most definitely see them losing to the Steelers and Broncos. So count your eggs. That would be losing 1-4 of your last five, which that would be bad if they lose 4 of their last five. Do I see them losing 4 of their last five? I don't think so, but it's a very real possibility.
The Panthers are probably more of a count your chickens type of game.
Yeah.
That's a game you could probably bank that they're going to win.
It's a get right game.
Yeah, it really is. For me, it's just, and I've said this before, whenever there's a team who's as visibly shaky as the Chiefs, you know, we've seen it before, the 2019 Patriots, 2020 Steelers, that one Jaguars team, you know, the one from last year.
Yep.
It's just all it takes is a loss or two, and then they come in bunches. It starts snowballing. This really, it's about mental toughness. Because I, as a Pats fan, I'll bring up the 2019 Pats. Once that loss came, they curled up into a ball. They started playing conservative. They, you know, it's almost like they stopped trying because they weren't mentally tough. And that is something that the Chiefs have to avoid. And look, and if you listen to the Chiefs fans, which I don't know why you would, you know, you're going to hear all matter of excuses from injuries to the refs actually aren't on their side, supposedly. But no, this is a game where Patrick Mahomes' sloppy play, which he has been playing horribly for most of the year, finally came back to bite him. Very seldom can you throw two interceptions and still win the game. And for once, I mean, I'll give credit to Sean McDermott. He outcoached Andy Reid. I didn't think it was possible. Heck, a lot of people didn't think so. But yeah, no, they had no answers for Josh Allen. They had no answers for the Bills' short game. James Cook had 2 touchdowns. I mean, he did nothing else, but he got 2 touchdowns. But Buffalo had more ways to beat Kansas City than Kansas City had ways to beat Buffalo. That's just how it was. So now that you've lost, like I said, there are two things you can do. One, you can get down on yourselves, which I do not see Kansas City doing that. They don't strike me as a get down on themselves kind of team, right? Or, you know, you can just go back to the drawing board and try to beat up on who's next. Oh, yeah, that's right, the Panthers. So overall, I think they're going to be fine. At least they should be fine. Should emphasis on should, but you never know, because I'm also brought back to the 2015 Patriots, where once they were handed their first loss, they got handed an L the very next game by the Sam Bradford Philadelphia Eagles. However, come on, it's still the Panthers. I'm not expecting them to beat Kansas City. And I'm also expecting Kansas City to beat Vegas. But the Chargers, the Steelers, and the Broncos could provide some potholes. And maybe even the Texans. I'm not really as high on them. I think they're just kind of sputtering right now. But as a whole, this schedule is a lot trickier than meets the eye. I definitely expect Kansas City to drop one or two more, but we'll see. And I will give them a friendly little warning here. Kansas City, you need to be careful. Because don't look now, but the Chargers are right on your tail. I'm not saying the Chargers are going to win, but I don't know if Kansas City really has ever had a team be like this close to them this late in the year in the Mahomes era. Because the Chargers are what, 7-3?
Yep.
Yep.
So, yeah. Their margin for error just got a tiny bit smaller. That is all.
Yeah, look, the Chiefs are going to end up being fine. We all have them in the playoffs. At 9-1, that's very hard to just miss the playoffs after that. It's hard to even tank your season after that. Like, let's say you sneak into the playoffs. Like, do we really see them finishing less than 12-5 at worst?
No, not really.
No. They'll probably be 14-3, 13-4. Like, that's probably where they're going to be. And that's if they, I mean, I think they're going to lose a lot more games than just one this season. But if you have just in hindsight, 13-4 is a pretty good record. And in most cases, it would be good enough to win the number one seed and subsequently a first round bye and a pretty easy road at that point to another trip to the AFC Championship game. Are they going to win the Super Bowl? This Chiefs team looks too shaky to go and do that, but to say that they can't at least win a playoff game or two, I think that's not too far-fetched for them to have a little bit of postseason success, just based off the experience they have, the aura of this team, and just playing in Arrowhead. I think just the Chiefs are always a tough out, and even in games where they just play bad football, they still find ways to win. And as shaky as this team has looked, as much as I don't believe they're winning the Super Bowl this year, they're still going to be a tough team to beat and a team that no playoff team should want to face. Looking at...
I mean, regardless, it's still going to be really hard to bet against Mahomes in the playoffs once playoff time comes around.
Yeah, and like we all see why this is happening, why they're playing so poorly. They don't have good pass catchers. And I was bringing this up before the season started. I think it was around draft season. When have they ever drafted well at wide receiver?
True.
And I'm sorry, we can't really include Tyreek Hill if he was a fifth-round pick. Any sort of late-round draft pick is a pleasant surprise. If you plan for your late-round picks to be your studs, then you're a terrible GM and probably deserve to be fired. You should plan for your early round picks to work out. You should hope to find a pleasant surprise out of your late round picks. And if Mecole Hardman was your second round pick, if Xavier Worthy was your first round pick last year, if Rashee Rice, who can't stay out of trouble, is one of your best wide receivers right now, if you're banking on DeAndre Hopkins, an old guy who's playing solid ball but still old, then you're not that good of a GM when it comes to wide receivers. And they've had this issue for decades. When was the last time that they've had a truly elite wide receiver that they actually planned for? Tyreek Hill was a late round pick. It worked out. I'm not saying that, you know, that he's one of the best wide receivers in football. All I am saying is that when it comes to your evaluation of wide receivers in early rounds, they have a terrible track record. And that's something to look at. Once Travis Kelce retires, which at some point he will, and he's already kind of fallen off here. Once Andy Reid is gone, what are you going to do then with Patrick Mahomes? Because if you're having this much trouble with finding the next top target, then you may be in big trouble in the next few years. So just something to consider.
I don't know. I think they already found their next top target in Noah Gray. Two tutties, baby.
Hey, to be fair to Chris, that's the same amount that I believe Travis Kelce has this season.
Yeah.
I mean, Kelce is a system tight end, we already knew, but here's the thing, right? When you go back and you look at the Chiefs,
Well, also, to be fair, that's the same amount that Noah Gray has all season. So
yeah, I know. But hold on, I'm going to tell you this
Noah Gray just got the extendo, mm-hmm. though.
He did, in fact, get that. I'm going to say one thing, though. If the Chiefs get a new tight end who plays even, like, remotely decent, like, above 800 yards and stuff, and that actually hurts Travis Kelce, but whatever. But, see, here's the thing, right? You go back and you look at Kansas City's drafting history, let's just say for the past 5 years. Here are their first round picks: Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Then you got Trent McDuffie and George Karlaftis. That's good. Then Felix Anudike Uzama and Xavier Worthy.
I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire was a good pick. He just got hit with the injury bug.
He was a one-year wonder. He's what Sony Michel was to the Patriots. And even still, then there's, I mean, once again, like you, and like Adam said, it's not sustainable. It's just not sustainable to hope your mid and late rounders pan out because you're not that good at drafting. Because when I look back at some of these recent draft classes, I am so underwhelmed.
They're very good with drafting.
Literally, a Patrick Mahomes, nay, an Andy Reid away from being a bottom 10 team.
Yeah. And if you look at their defensive, right.
I was just going to say, like,
one of us needs to talk at first.
All right. I was just going to say, forget Mahomes. Keep Mahomes there, remove Andy Reid, and we're looking at the Cincinnati Bengals from this year.
Sure. But their drafting on the defensive side is really good. And if they have good, if they have a good defense, they have a good offensive-minded coach who can manage the defense. If you have a decent offensive line, they're going to be competitive. And as long as they have that, they're going to be fine. Just if we're talking about them being championship contenders, eventually Andy Reid will retire. He's getting old. Their offensive line isn't always going to be this solid. As shaky as it's been over the past few years, it's mostly been with penalties. They still keep Patrick Mahomes on his feet. As long as they're struggling with finding new pass catchers, then what do we think about their chances with Patrick Mahomes to win a championship in the next 10 years? Because they've been built to win now, but as they age, it's going to be just the Patrick Mahomes show.
I mean, just looking at the way that Mahomes is playing, honestly, like some of the throws he's making not making are pretty drastic, like bad overthrows, just bad throws in general that if it was any other quarterback, he'd probably be benched.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, he does make those kinds of throws at a high enough clip to not get benched. It's just, I don't know, man.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, you just look at the stats in general, too. It's just bad. Like there was at one point that he had more interceptions than he did touchdowns. I mean, that isn't the case right now. He's at 15 to 11, but
it's still not very good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're going to have to see over the next few years, how the Chiefs are going to manage this, because they're going to have a lot of turnover in the next few years. Andy Reid will be gone. Travis Kelce may still be on the team, but is he going to be elite? Probably not. So there's a lot of things to consider with the Chiefs as an organization moving forward. They may find themselves back in championship contention, but I also teased this right after they won their last Super Bowl. I gave him credit, obviously, because they won back-to-back Super Bowls. That hadn't happened since Brady did it. But remember Brady? There was some time between his third and fourth Super Bowl. So yeah, Patrick Mahomes may be an all-time great quarterback, but that doesn't mean he's always going to win championships left and right. Even Brady didn't do that. There was a 10-year gap where, yeah, they managed things well, and their head coach stayed with him for that entire time. He had the luxury of not having to go through a coaching change, but there was a lot of personnel changes that were moved around him, and it took until 2014 where they really started to establish a championship culture again. They were still competitive. They were going to championships. They were going to conference championships. They just weren't good enough to win the Super Bowls. And that might happen to Patrick Mahomes, you know? So we'll see. Let's move on since we've talked to this topic to death. But we go from one upset to another. The Steelers beating the Ravens, what that means for Lamar Jackson and his team going forward, and the Steelers and their expectations going forward. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros, Chris Kostich. The Steelers remain 8-2, and I have no idea how. They're first in the AFC North. And I remember a time over the summer when we were previewing this division in our series of previews for each division in football going into this season. Over the summer, we always preview the upcoming season, divisions, player countdowns, all that stuff. Lots of fun stuff. Tune in. And when we were talking about the AFC North, we didn't even consider the Steelers as a division leader. We thought it was down to, yes, the Baltimore Ravens, but also the Cincinnati Bengals, which is another thing. But none of us saw the Steelers winning this division, but they are steadily winning football games. And they're doing it by defense and game managing. Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, in their time, each starting, have won football games in convincing fashion. I'm not going to say that they are blowing anybody away, that they're playing unbelievable football, that either of them has revived their careers. But they've played good enough football so that their defense can pick up the slack. And they make the throws when they need to make them. And that's all we really expected from Justin Fields. That's all we needed from Russell Wilson. Two quarterbacks who have had a troubling past couple of years, who have finally figured it out in a sense. But the Ravens, I mean, we've looked at this team as the best team in the AFC this year. And quietly, they've been losing a few games that they had no business losing. They're beating the hard ones. But how the hell is it that out of their 4 losses, only one of those games came at a time where we actually figured they have a chance of losing? Like, they lost to the Chiefs. Okay, fine. Defending champs, Patrick Mahomes. They just find ways to win games. But this team, the Steelers, you wound up finding a way to lose to them. You lost to the Browns, fresh off their quarterback change going to Jameis Winston. And you also lost the Raiders with Gardner Minshew starting. I mean, look, Tuck has been talking a lot about this Ravens defense, and that defense blows. But when you only allow 18 points in a game and you still lose. And might I also point out, the fact that the Steelers ended up winning this game, this is more a testament to their defense. The fact that they won off scoring 18 points, every single one of those points was from Chris Boswell, their field goal kicker. Their kicker hit 6 field goals. That was their entire offense. You know, there's a certain quarterback in the AFC North, a division rival, who scored like 9 of those. As far as touchdowns go, and hasn't beat them once. And they did it off 6 field goals. That's the power of an elite defense, man. And listen, Lamar Jackson's having a great offensive year. Derrick Henry, I still believe, is offensive player of the year. But we have to look at this Ravens team and think, I mean, the defense is part of the team. So as the team as a whole, can we really look at this team and say they're going to represent in the AFC for the Super Bowl? Because the more games they lose like this, the less confidence I have in them. I'll let you guys discuss.
I mean, we want to talk about the Chiefs having these voodoo power bullshit. Let's talk about the Steelers possibly selling their soul to the devil. Oh, my goodness. Justin Tucker missing 2 field goals. Derrick Henry fumbling for the first time in, what, like 5 years, 4 years, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Something ridiculous. And I think Adam touched on it the best, is that it was game managing that helped the Steelers win this game. 36 minutes of possession time for the Steelers, 23 for the Ravens. And the Steelers didn't even get more total yards. They got more first downs, but that was really it. And they won the turnover battle. 2 fumbles lost for the Ravens, 1 interception for the Steelers, and that was obviously Russell Wilson. But, and even in the fact of like the plays to the yards as well, Steelers yards per play 4.1, Ravens 6.1. That doesn't make any sense. That shouldn't, like, stuff like that shouldn't necessarily be happening at all. Now, I will say Ravens, it goes back to blowing these huge leads. It just seems to be a bit of disorganization, right? Take that 2-point play at the end of the game, for example. You got Isaiah Likely and Rashad Bateman, or Zay Flowers, one of the two, that are slapping at each other 2 seconds before Lamar's about to snap the ball, and neither of them go out for a route. And obviously Lamar's looking for one of them, and none of them is out there because they're both blocking for him. And so he has nowhere to throw. So Ravens got to clean that up. I mean, credit to the Ravens defense. They actually showed up today, but their offense didn't. They ran into a very elite Steelers defense. And Russ didn't even have the greatest game in the world, but George Pickens is actually trying. George Pickens is actually trying, and he got 8 catches, 89 yards. This is a Steelers team that has taken full control of the AFC North and has gotten people turning heads. I don't know if they're going to make a very deep run in the playoffs, but sure is looking like it. Also, interesting note, Lamar hasn't won in Pittsburgh since 2019. Mentioned this on Friday. I'll mention it again. And it's still has rain true.
It's going to hold true until the postseason if they do run into each other. And then if they lose again, then that's really going to be like, what the hell is going on? I can't believe it, but CJ?
You know, whenever we talk about the Ravens, I think you have a point. You can't just say, oh, Lamar Jackson MVP, oh, Derrick Henry, best running back in the league. You can't mention the Ravens without talking about their god-awful defense. I don't even know if they have a defense. I really don't. Because everyone just seems to score on them. I mean, they're playing. Everyone's like, oh, all 22 players. No, all 11 players. You do not have a defense. And the worst part is, why? Just why don't you have a defense? There's no reason for you not to. You have guys like Madubuike and Roquan Smith and Marlon Humphrey. And I know Kyle Hamilton was hurt, but I'm still mentioning him. Give me a break. I don't care. Why? Why do you have all these names and you still suck? There is no reason for that. It defies all explanation, yet here you are continuing to suck. I genuinely, the only thing that I can think of is that they are really missing Mike McDonald. That's what it has to be, right? That is literally the only thing I can think of, because their defense went from not sucking last season to really sucking this season. And really, the only big difference that I can think of is, you know, Mike McDonald. Well, that and Patrick Queen left. But are you really going to tell me, are you going to look me in the eye and tell me that Patrick Queen was the only thing stopping this defense from being god-awful? If you are, kindly get your head examined. But it's got to be McDonald. They're missing McDonald. And their current defensive coordinator, I believe, is Zach Orr. Yeah, he has to go. He needs to be fired. Toss him into the Chesapeake. It's Jover for him, I tell you. It really is. But for Pittsburgh, though, I've got to be that guy. I got to point it out. Russell Wilson has not lost a game, I don't think, because he debuted against the Jets, where they won 37-15. Then they beat the Giants 26-18. They upset the Commanders 28-27, and they just handed the Ravens a huge upset 18-16. Both their losses came with Justin Fields, and the Steelers haven't lost yet. So, just what's it going to take for them to finally lose with Russ? Because Russ has not been playing terribly. He's been, I will say, a game manager, but I feel like game manager is almost underselling it. Because he's made some really good throws. He got a completion percentage of 60%, which isn't great, but 942 yards, 6 touchdowns, only 2 picks, passer rating of 94.4. You'll take that. He's the best QB they've had since Roethlisberger retired. Heck, he's the best QB they've had literally since like those final 2 awful years of Ben Roethlisberger, where he's just dragging his bloated carcass out onto the field and chucking it into triple coverage. You remember that. I remember that. And I know Steelers fans remember that. But let's take a step back, right, and actually look at the remainder of their schedule. Up next, Thursday, November 21st, which is, you know, 2 days from now, they are going to go to Cleveland, where they will face off against Jameis Winston and the power of friendship. That's literally what the Browns are. So I think they're going to win that. Then they're going to Cincy, which Cincy is another team that went to the Baltimore Ravens Academy of not having a defense. And don't get me wrong, Joe Burrow, this kid can play. Adam's a big Joe Burrow guy. I'm a big Joe Burrow guy. I think Chris is too. The only person on the podcast that isn't is Tuck. But oh my God, the Bengals defense continues to waste prime Joe Burrow performances. And that's a very winnable game for Pittsburgh. Then you're hosting famous Jameis and the power of friendship the game after that. Then you're going to Philly. You know, we love ourselves a good Pennsylvania Bowl, but I do think that's a loss unless Nick Sirianni reverts back to his old self, which could happen. You never know. That Steelers defense is terrifying. Then you got to go to Baltimore, which I don't know. You know, Steelers, Ravens hate each other, and home field advantage is really big.
I'd have to say the Ravens would take that one.
Yeah, I would imagine the Ravens would take that. Then you're hosting Kansas City. I'm not going to say that's a slam dunk loss. I'm just not. I think Kansas City wins, but I think Pittsburgh can make them sweat. And with that defense, hey, you never know. And then finally, you host the Bengals. So at barest of minimums, Pittsburgh's going to get 3 more wins. They're going to finish above 500. But I can see them getting 5 or 6 wins. It just depends on like how the chips fall, if their defense can continue to play well, and if Russell Wilson can continue to play safe. And Chris, I think you have a point. I don't know what the Steelers are doing to win, but they apparently stole some of the Patrick Mahomes' secret stuff, and now they're just becoming, I wouldn't even say good, just they play mistake-free football. And as far as the Ravens go, I am just not confident in them anymore. Unless they get like a new defensive coordinator or the scheme changes rapidly, that defense is going to weigh them down. But for Pittsburgh, that defense can carry them.
It's Taylor Swift's dark magic that's doing it. She's before every game out in the parking lot, just casting some sort of spell, making some sort of animal sacrifice, and just probably playing some of her music.
But okay, what's Pittsburgh doing?
Oh, they got Lil Wayne and or no, not Lil Wayne.
It's Mike Tomlin. It's Mike Tomlin.
It's Wiz Khalifa's powers. He's got the black and yellow magic going over there.
It's Mike Tomlin. How the hell does that team? Even Kenny Pickett finished 9-8 twice with Tomlin.
I know that we've given Mike Tomlin a lot of flack for all these like 500 finishes for the last 5-6 years, but like at the same time, it also goes to show like how good of a coach he is. At the same time, the fact that he's even on the brink of even snipping the playoffs with the rosters that he's had is impressive enough.
Yeah. However, especially you still got to win now.
That was the end of it, really.
No, I was just going to say, you still got to win. That's, for me at least, that is truly what it comes down to, is that finishing 500 is really nice. And one of the harsh things that I will say about Pittsburgh is that where's the hardware? Is it? You have had, remember the killer bees? That's, you can never escape it. You had Roethlisberger, you had Bell, you had Brown. You had an elite offensive line, elite defense with all these guys, and you never won. So that's what
I'm saying. You know why they never won.
You don't care what kind of dark magic you have. If, unlike Kansas City, it just, you know, pulls a Baltimore Ravens defense level disappearing act every time you go to the playoffs.
Well, you know why they never won. They never won because they had the bullies in Foxborough.
True. No, but that's true.
Jacksonville that one year.
Yeah.
Remember they were bragging about, remember they were posting on social media about how they love coming back to get revenge before they even got past Jacksonville, and then they get punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were already looking. It's crazier too when you think about how Jacksonville had already beaten Pittsburgh earlier that season as well.
And let me tell you something. Do you know what the last playoff game they won is? Really put your thinking caps on, boys and girls. It was the 2016-2017 season. They had literally beaten the Miami Dolphins without Ryan Tannehill before going to the AFC Championship game and getting promptly backhanded back to earth by New England.
I remember that.
That was the last time they won a playoff game. They keep finishing above 500 just to either just miss the playoffs or be a one and done.
I remember that game. Matt Moore almost died that day.
Yeah, shout out Matt Moore.
Oh, I remember that one.
He got killed.
That was back when I was a children, man.
All right. We got to move on. So we have talked the Chiefs and the Bills. We've talked Steelers, Ravens. So what we have gone over is the Bills and Josh Allen winning. We've gone over Lamar Jackson and the Ravens losing. We're going to talk about how both of these matchups affect the MVP race, because things have gotten significantly closer over the last few weeks. We're going to go over that next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros, Chris Kostich. So I teased this before the segment ended, but we went over 2 matchups where one team won, who is on the rise, another team starting to decline a little bit, starting to become a little sour to everyone's eye. And we're going to look at the MVP race that we really haven't touched on enough this season, mainly because we thought Lamar Jackson was running away with it. And statistically, he kind of is. But if you look over the course of the last couple decades, the vast majority of MVP winners came on teams that had the higher seed. If there was another candidate that had the lower seed, the team wasn't winning quite as much, then they would be considered below the player that wasn't quite as qualified as far as statistics go. I am referring to the Buffalo Bills and the Baltimore Ravens. The Bills are now 9-2. They have a strong chance of finishing with the number one seed. Pat, and as far as Josh Allen goes with his statistics, he still had a very good season so far. He's projected to have over 4,000 yards. And looking at overall, his touchdown to interception ratio, 18-5. That's still very good. He's on pace for around 30 touchdown passes. And look at what he's doing it with. You have an aging Amari Cooper. You have Khalil Shakir, who's a number two at best. Curtis Samuel, who's been an afterthought. And you have Keon Coleman, who's been questionable so far. Okay, he's been he's had his moments, but hasn't so far not proven that he's a wide receiver one. He's had his moments, but if he is one, he hasn't proven it quite yet. And the defense lost so many pieces. Defense has been okay. Offensive line has been meh. Kind of how the Bills offensive line has been during Josh Allen's entire career. Josh Allen's not working with a lot. And he's somehow willed his team to a 9-2 record and doing it with pretty good stats, which is hard to do with a bad team. Looking at Lamar Jackson, 7-4, the team is, the Ravens, and his overall statistics, 25-3 touchdown interception ratio, that is stellar, and he's on pace for a career year. He's on pace for 4,500 yards, nearly 40 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. Never have I thought that Lamar Jackson would flirt with 40 touchdown passes as a passer. I never thought that he could do that. I never thought he would be anywhere close to 5,000 yards. But the problem is his team is 7-4. And there's a very strong chance he may not even win his division. And this is something that happened a few years back in the MVP race between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady's Buccaneers still finished 13-4, but Aaron Rodgers' Green Bay Packers finished with a slightly better record. They got the number one seed, unlike the Buccaneers. And on top of that, Aaron Rodgers still had pretty good statistics. They were not nearly as good as Brady's. He threw for 43 touchdown passes and over 5,000 yards. Those are MVP caliber numbers. But they gave it to Aaron Rodgers because Aaron Rodgers, he did throw for less interceptions, but less touchdown passes. And the team overall had a better record and they had better playoff seeding. This is an argument that I disagree with as far as the evaluation for MVP, because unless your team is bad, like actually bad, I think you should still be in consideration for MVP. Because if you take Lamar Jackson off of this Ravens team and you replace him with an average quarterback, you may have a sub 500 record. You may be a top 10 pick. If you look at the 2021 race as well, if you replace Aaron Rodgers with Tom Brady in that situation, they're probably better. But the Buccaneers' discipline and the injury bug that hit them later on in the season ultimately sank them. So this is an argument I disagree with. And if we're really looking at just statistics, if we're really looking at overall how a team does, then Joe Burrow should win league MVP. Because Burrow has had the best season of all quarterbacks this season. But this is a 7-4 Ravens team, not a 4-7 team. Well, I still think as long as your team is competitive, the record should not matter. So that's kind of my argument. But what do you guys think?
I don't think there's much else to say. Joe Burrow is my MVP, that's for sure. I mean, looking at it right now, he's the only player with 3,000, only quarterback with 3,000 yards. He has more touchdowns than Lamar and is projected to have more of everything than Lamar besides rushing stats, of course. I don't know. It, like, Joe Burrow is basically the only reason why the Bengals are, like, he's the only reason why people haven't really given up on the Bengals. Like, I'm still somewhat having faith in them. And it's really because of the schedule that they have in all intents and purposes, really. Because obviously they have the Steelers, they have the bye this week, and then they'll have the Steelers in 2 weeks. Cowboys, that's definitely a win. Titans, that's a win. Browns, that's a win. Broncos, Steelers. Now, I say they split with the Steelers. I could see them sneaking out a win against the Broncos. So really, at that point, you're only losing one of your last six games, winning five of your last six. That, shit, that's 9-8. That might be good enough for a 6 or 7 spot right there. But, I mean, he's basically the only reason why that the Bengals are even afloat right now. And they're barely afloat.
But do you hear how that statement goes? You're saying that they're afloat, but they're 4-7.
Yeah. So, but you also have to look at the schedule ahead. That's the schedule ahead, and having Joe Burrow is basically the only reason why that they're barely afloat.
But look at their past schedule. Look at the teams that they've faced. Yeah. And that they've lost to.
Chris, seriously though, what they lost? I mean, like, Adam is a point, you know. Like, look at who since he's lost to.
Like, yeah,
and you think they're just now going to turn around? It's like, oh, because Joe Burrow, you know, he really, really wants to win. You really think that's going to be the reason?
No,
I highly doubt it.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, I've seen crazier things where quarterbacks go into God mode, and Joe Burrow is basically in God mode right now.
Like, yeah. But I mean, but look, even the games that they're winning, right? Even the games that they're winning, like a 10-point victory against the Panthers, a 10-point victory against the Giants, a 7-point victory against the Browns. Good Lord, that's terrible. That is, oh Christ, that's just bad.
Well, my question is,
I'm saying, even still, they're losing to teams like New England, you know, and they just got pantsed by Philly. They can't seem to beat Baltimore. They lost to the Commanders before we even knew what Jaden Daniels was. And don't even say to me, oh, but they always suck early in the season. Well, maybe they shouldn't.
Yeah. I honestly agree.
Don't suck. In the early part of the season, you won't be here.
No, I 100% agree. Like, they always suck at the beginning of the season, and it sucks that they suck at the beginning of the season because they shouldn't. They really shouldn't. And Patriots week one, it's week one. Shit's bound to happen. Patriots lost to the Cardinals in a week one game, I'm pretty sure.
I don't recall that, no.
It was like an early week game way back when, I remember. Where was it going with this? But at the end of the day, they're barely afloat, and Joe Burrow is the reason why. Joe Burrow has been the entirety of the offense minus Jamar Chase, but Jamar Chase wouldn't be doing shit if he didn't have Burrow at quarterback. So
Drew Brees and Dan Marino have both had seasons where they passed for over 5,000 yards and 40 plus touchdowns. Both of those quarterbacks failed to win league MVP when that happened.
How many interceptions did they have?
Because I don't have that in front of me, but that all came because they missed the playoffs. Even if you throw 12 interceptions, or even 15 interceptions, when you throw 40 plus touchdown passes and 5,000 yards, then that's not really going to factor in. I mean, it's what's going to factor in is the fact that whoever's voting on league MVP is going to look at their season and they're going to say, well, how valuable really are you if your team can't even win games? And now, if you're going to make the argument that they win out, They're 4-7 right now. Let's say they run the table and they go 10-7. He should win league MVP. I'd agree with you there because now he has the stats and the team is competitive, which is why I don't agree with the argument of record being the sole argument. This is the reason why Patrick Mahomes for a few weeks was in the MVP conversation, according to betting odds, because the team was undefeated until 5 minutes ago. So I don't think it's the end-all be-all record, but I do think it matters a little bit. And when you look at a guy like Josh Allen, pretty good stats, 18-5 touchdown interception ratio. He's going to end up throwing for more than 30 touchdown passes. And the team is 9-2. But I still think that's not going to be enough if you're looking at Lamar Jackson, who's having a significantly better season, and the team is 7-4. Because the team is still competitive with him there. This defense is so bad that they've ended up losing games, but they're still afloat because of Lamar Jackson. But if they're 4-7 and Lamar's having this season, then forget it, because the team is below 500. How valuable could you possibly be if you can't even take your team to the playoffs? That's my argument.
It's good. I completely agree with that argument. But, I mean, that's just the voters not knowing ball at that point. They're just not seeing the actual big picture. Everyone and their mother knows that the Bengals have a terrible defense.
They do.
Everyone knows that.
So do the Ravens.
Exactly. Yeah, so like, so then why are the Ravens better with statistically perhaps a worse defense, especially now?
Do they have a Let me
around
let me
that, yeah. that. I mean, okay, at least eye test wise, it looks a lot worse. But
I would say that Bengals have a worse.
Hold on, I'm looking it up. Keep going.
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if they're both bad defenses, then we're splitting hairs at that point. I mean, it doesn't even take a pair of eyes to just look at the scoreboard and see every single game the Ravens have won. It's been where they give up like 30 plus points.
By the way, the Bengals defense is ranked 24th in yards allowed, and the Ravens is 26th per Fox Sports.
So we're splitting hairs.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
So it's the same, but yet Lamar continues to drag a slightly worse defense further than Burrow.
I still don't think the MVP discussion is, unfortunately, agree with it or not, it is not between Burrow and Lamar. It is between Allen and Lamar right now. Josh Allen is the runner-up for league MVP, and I haven't even seen the updated betting odds yet. He could be close to tied, if not ahead, at this point. But this is an argument I disagree with, because just because if you have two teams who are both in playoff contention or in the playoffs, and their candidates are neck and neck, let's say one has better statistics, who has a lower seed, I still think that team with the quarterback with better statistics, who may have a lower seed, should win league MVP, because you're still a competitive team. You dragged that team to the playoffs in spite of all your team's deficiencies. When you're the best player on a team that's already there, already at the top, then I'm sorry, like, the other guy deserves it more than the guy whose team is at the top, because your team, the whole team around you, is the reason you're winning too. But Lamar's dragging this team along. Again, like, I'm saying I disagree with the argument that Josh Allen will probably, if things continue the way they are, win league MVP.
Josh Allen is currently first in the odds. Lamar's second. Jared Goff's third. Jalen Hurts is fourth. Mahomes is fifth. Conversation is ridiculous.
Literally because of the QB award.
Yeah.
A record thing. I mean, up until 5 minutes ago, they were 9-0. So that's what I look at when I see Patrick Mahomes up there. If the team was like a 500 team with Mahomes playing how he's playing, then I don't even think he would crack the top five. I don't think he'd be anywhere near the MVP odds. But remind me again, what are the top two right now in odds?
It's Allen and Lamar. Kind of just depends on where you look at, but Allen's at like plus 150. Lamar's around like plus 200. Like I said, it kind of depends on where you...
Allen passed Lamar?
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, Allen passed him.
So record-wise, things need to change because this is the way the MVP voters kind of look at things is they look at the team's record, which is, again, an argument that I disagree with. I disagree with it as the end-all, be-all. I disagreed with it in 2021 when Aaron Rodgers took it over Tom Brady. I disagree with it now, seeing Lamar Jackson's clearly having the better season than Josh Allen. But Josh Allen has taken a team that also has some deficiencies to a better record. He may not have as good statistics, but I think it's a blend of winning and statistics. I don't think you can just look at one and not the other. And I think Lamar Jackson has that. But again, if things continue how they are, I think Josh Allen is going to end up winning league MVP.
Yeah, it's more likely than not. Yeah.
Yeah. If we're being realistic, not with the whole, we're not saying Joe Burrow's my MVP in a very realistic standpoint, then it.
Oh, you were saying it 5 minutes ago.
No, I know. That's obviously realistically, it's going to end up being probably Josh Allen.
If Joe Burrow ends up squeaking into the playoffs, I'm going to be right there with you for Burrow for MVP.
Regardless of how the Bengals season ends up, he's going to be my MVP.
Sure. I mean, he's my favorite player in the league. But listen, this is why I think record isn't the end-all be-all. I think as long as you're competitive, as long as your team makes the playoffs, let's say they make it in as like five or six seed, right? And they finish 10-7. Joe Burrow throws for 40-plus touchdown passes, maybe 10 to 12 interceptions, 5,000 yards. That's my league MVP at that point. Because he just took a team that had so many deficiencies, had unbelievable statistics, and took them to the playoffs. That's an MVP. Definitionally, that is an MVP. Which is why I don't think record should be the end-all be-all. But it's going to this year because league voters are... Their thinking is medieval.
That's a way to put it.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on. And we're going to go from one season from Lamar Jackson and from Josh Allen having an incredible year to one other one who may be in the race for a different award. A guy who we haven't talked about nearly enough this season, who it's about time this guy gets his flowers. That's Bo Nix. We're going to talk about Bo Nix and his case for Offensive Rookie of the Year. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros and Chris Kostich. And we've touched quite a bit, probably more than we even should have, on the Offensive Rookie of the Year race. But it's such an interesting race because we have a lot of quarterbacks who are playing really good ball in their rookie years. And it's very rare to see so many quarterbacks in their rookie years all at once playing well at the same time. Usually you get one, maybe you get two. The second guy will be showing some flashes. We never see this, where everybody in their rookie years just balled out. Even when the draft class ended up being electric, the 2020 draft class wasn't really showing its true colors until a few years later. And the 2018 class, Lamar Jackson didn't play most of the year in his rookie year in 2018. And Josh Allen sucked until 2020. So as far as rookie years go, this is the best class in recent memory as far as quarterbacks go. And I don't think that's a controversial statement to be made. But we've talked a lot about Caleb Williams, who was playing well earlier this year. We've talked a lot about Drake May, who has done more with less despite the bad record over in New England. He's been playing very good ball. Future's bright in New England. We've been talking plenty about Caleb Williams playing well earlier on this season. We've talked a lot about Jaden Daniels, who is arguably the leader for Offensive Rookie of the Year. I am here to tell you that Bo Nix against the Atlanta Falcons not only led his team to a 38-6 win, but he threw for 4 touchdown passes, 307 yards, and completed 28 out of his 33 passes. This was, so far, Bo Nix's best game this season, and obviously, subsequently, his entire career. As of so far this year, he has 2,200 yards, 14 touchdowns, and 6 picks. Overall, has had a very good season. Looking at the last few games, he's thrown 6 touchdowns to no interceptions in his last 2 contests. This guy has been, he's played well past his standards as far as his rookie year goes. How his career goes is still up for debate, but overall, he's had a tremendous season. As far as all of the rookies go, he has thrown for the most touchdowns out of the 4 who've been starting with 14. He has the most overall with 18. And the case is starting to be made around the league that Bo Nix should win league Offensive Rookie of the Year over Jaden Daniels. And I'm here to tell you that he's not there yet. If you look at overall his statistics, Bo Nix still has thrown 3 more picks than Jaden Daniels. He has still thrown for less yardage than Daniels. His QBR is still 12 points lower than Daniels. And his overall completion percentage is 3 percentage points lower, which may not seem like much, but that's actually a lot. So yes, Bo Nix is getting closer. He's making the race a lot closer. After Caleb Williams got close to Jaden Daniels, he fell off a little bit. He's regressed. Maybe things will work out with him. Maybe it won't. Who knows? But Bo Nix has closed the gap himself. And if things trend the way they have been trending lately, Jaden Daniels has been dipping a little bit. Bo Nix has been getting better. If this trajectory continues, then I think Bo Nix will overcome Jaden Daniels to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. I just don't think he's there yet, because people are looking at the surface level, looking at the amount of touchdowns he's thrown, which is the only thing that Bo Nix has over Jaden Daniels so far. And Jaden Daniels has led the team to a better record. They're currently 7-4, the Washington Commanders. The Broncos are just 6-5. So that's still something to look at when you're looking at the Offensive Rookie of the Year race. Record matters. How you do with your team, the contributions you're able to make. And Bo Nix has had a stellar year so far. I just think still Jaden Daniels is a little bit better. It deserves to be a close race. But still, give me Jaden Daniels. Let's see if this continues, though.
I would probably have to agree right now. It's probably still Jaden Daniels, but I'd say it's by a hair. It's by a hair at this point. But I think by the end of the season, I could see Bo Nix being the Offensive Rookie of the Year at this rate, because there's a good 3-game window here that's coming up that Bo Nix has the potential to go absolutely bonkers. Raiders, Browns, Colts. Then they got the Chargers, Bengals, Chiefs, last 3 games of the season. Maybe they were on the table. Maybe they were on the table. But I think these next 3 games for Bo Nix are going to be huge in terms of the Offensive Rookie of the Year race, see how he performs against these 3 teams. Obviously, it's going to be interesting to see how he performs against the Chargers, Bengals, and Chiefs last 3 games. But I think this next 3 is going to be indicative of the Offensive Rookie of the Year race moving forward.
CJ?
I need to go with Jaden Daniels just because, you know, and look, and I know that his team's technically doing better. I can't say anything that you guys have already said. A lot of it, too, a lot of people don't like it, but it's true. We need to look at the eye test, right? One of them looks a lot better and a lot more explosive, and I'm here to add a new wrinkle to this. And I know we're past an hour, so I'm going to keep this brief. Bo Nix's stats, especially completion and touchdowns, have been overinflated by the fact he is a dink-and-dunk quarterback. Very rarely does he create the electric plays, and very rarely does he stretch the field. 6.4 yards per attempt compared to Jaden Daniels' 8. And if you adjust, right? So, you know, you can, like, adjust it. It's still Bo Nix. When you, like, adjust, right, you know, like, actual, like, air yards and stuff, it's still 6.4. Meanwhile, Jaden Daniels goes up to 8.1. Like, I'm sorry. Like, you can't be another Drew Brees and just inflate your numbers by doing dinks and dunks an entire game. Because he's not taking risks. He's like, hey, I'm just going to pitch the ball off to Cortland Sutton or whoever the tight end is, Dulcich, and just let them take it for 20 yards. Like, that is so cheap.
I will say it hasn't been that much of a dink and dunk offense. He's thrown some pretty good balls.
Of course, because anyone can just look at a highlight reel and go, this is how it is. But they're called highlight reels for a reason. And I was actually debating one of my friends with this. So look at his highlight reel. I'm like, okay, cool. Highlights. That is what they are called. Of course you're going to show that. Because when you sit down and watch a Broncos game, it's like versus a Commanders game, one quarterback wows you more. One quarterback's just more electric, and it's Daniels.
I agree. I'm just saying that he's not completely a dink and dunk quarterback.
No, he's not completely a dink and dunk, but it's still like, I don't know, man. I don't even know how to describe it. He's just so unexciting.
The stats don't exactly reflect what he looks like on the. I'll acknowledge that much.
Yeah, no, his stats are very overinflated. You know, it's like he's. Also, the teams that he's beaten are very unimpressive. Same thing with Daniels, but Daniels' his feats are a little more interesting. Where'd he?
I think the problem that we always get with the dinks and dunks, though, too. I mean, I don't know where he went. I don't really give a fuck. I think it's a good argument in a sense, but at the same time, I think that's more just like the schemes. And at the end of the day, if a motherfucker's open in the flat and he can get you 5 yards, you're going to throw to the motherfucker that's open in the flat and get you 5 yards too.
Oh, yeah. So, are you going to do that? Or yes, are you going to do that? No, I'm playing with you. But yeah, no.
I was a college quarterback thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you know, I always forget you were a college quarterback. I always do.
Everyone forgets.
But. You know something? I bet you anything you're going to get drafted probably by like the Browns or the Giants or something. I'd take you over Daniel Jones, buddy.
I would throw still a lot of interceptions. I threw a lot of interceptions in high school.
You know what's the craziest part about Daniel Jones, though, is that Mel Kiper predicted – looking at the 2021 draft, which going into that year, that was supposed to be a generational draft. It was supposed to be a quarterback draft. And he said, when he looked at Daniel Jones, he said, Daniel Jones is better than every quarterback in that draft instead of Trevor Lawrence. Everyone laughed at him. No one is now. Because he ended up being right, like right on the money.
Yeah.
Part of me would still rather have Fields low key.
I mean, I'd rather none of them because every quarterback, including Trevor Lawrence, has been underwhelming. And underwhelming for some of them is an understatement. I mean, we knew really fast that Trey Lance wasn't the guy. Mac Jones regressed steadily.
Mm-hmm.
I still think Justin Fields can't read a defense well enough. Overall, that entire draft class just blew.
Yeah.
One of the most underwhelming draft classes of all time. But this one, I stand by my take that this one could be historic. I know Caleb Williams has regressed a lot, but I still hold out hope that give it a couple years or so and this kid will be fully developed. Clearly, he's not going to be playing his best ball in year one. Just not going to happen. But he could develop down the road. Just he's with one of the worst organizations of all time when it comes to developing quarterbacks. So, there is that. But we're going to move on, and we're going to get to our Week 11 edition of Top 3, Bottom 3 with our boy Chris Kostich. That's next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros, and Chris Kostich, who's going to be giving the rundown of our top three, bottom three. So the best and worst performances from our Week 11 slate of games. Chris, you're up.
Top three, bottom three. Top three was a little bit more competitive this week. Bottom three, there was a few teams that was kind of hard to... It's kind of hard to really pick out a very secure bottom three. But top three, feels like we're saying this team every week, but it's the Lions. I mean, this is the second time this month that they put up 50 points. 645 yards of total offense. They scored a touchdown on their first 7 drives. Each of their first 7 drives, they put up 7 points. And they scored on every single drive besides one. 52-6. Beatdown. And with that being said, first team on the bottom three, the Jaguars. You let up 645 yards at 52 points. I mean, I don't really care that you have Mac Jones as your quarterback. Obviously, it's bound to happen, but Jesus, this defense. It is probably the worst defense in the league, debatably. And by God, even the worst of the worst shouldn't be letting up 52 points. That's just egregious. Absolutely egregious. I'll let you guys give a second to comment if you want, but
even if you have a bad defense, just letting up a 50 burger to any team is egregious. Like that is terrible. And on the Lions side, I mean, as I teased before we started this, before we started this episode, that we had a lot of topics that we had to just cut out. The Lions were one of them, because they continue winning and they're getting a case of the Kansas City Chiefs where they just don't know how to lose. They're not only blowing teams out like they did this week, but on Thursday Night Football last week, their quarterback, who's had an incredible season up until that point, threw 5 interceptions and you still ended up winning the game. And I told everyone, listen, this was a bad game from Jared Goff. Let it go. Because we all know that he's perfectly capable of being the reason you win too, which is what happened in this game. I mean, he had probably statistically his best game all season. 4 touchdowns, 400 yards, 24 for 29. I told you guys, Jared Goff can be the reason you win sometimes. You could also win despite him, as we saw last week, but it just shows that this Lions team can beat you in a plethora of different ways, and it's been fun to watch.
CJ?
Yeah. Look, and I know that on top three, bottom three, Chris, it's really you because it's your thing. You always try to avoid teams that, you know, have backup quarterbacks because, you know, you can't really help it. And I get that. I do. But on the flip side, just because Mac Jones is your starter doesn't mean your defense should give up 52 points. I mean, heck, even the Bengals and Ravens defense didn't stoop that low because, you know, we were harassing those defenses all episode. And as for the Lions, this isn't even like their first 50 burger of the year now, is it? I don't think.
Second one of the month.
So, yeah, Detroit well earned in the top three.
Our next round of top three, bottom three is going to be another game. Broncos, Falcons. You can guess which one's which. Broncos winning 38-6. Obviously, we mentioned Bo Nix. Four touchdowns, 307 yards, only five incompletions. Wasn't even a big running attack from the Broncos. Their leading rusher was Javonte Williams, 9 carries, 59 yards, and a touchdown. Cortland Sutton. I freaking love Cortland Sutton. I love him. 7 catches, 78 yards. Didn't get a touchdown, but he should have. But Falcons, holy shit, dude. I don't know what to make of this team anymore. I really don't. Like, when CJ and I were talking on Friday, this was a game that the Falcons needed to win. Like, they needed, obviously, the Broncos needed to get off of their two-game losing streak, but seeing that the Broncos are kind of a very frisky team right now and the Falcons need to get a win against said frisky team to kind of keep their hopes alive of doing anything, of still having people think so highly of them. But they blew it. They blew it. I just can't look at the Falcons after this game and say, yeah, I definitely think they're Super Bowl contenders. I definitely think they're going to make it to the NFC Championship. By God, they're lucky if they'll even win a playoff game at this rate.
Listen, I wanted to share one last thing about this quarterback rookie class, since we already glazed over them last segment. Take any one of these four who have been starting and put them into this year's draft class instead of last year's. They're the number one overall pick. Slam dunk. Bo Nix is getting drafted number one overall. I still think Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams or Drake May would be going number one, just because this draft class has been so good. Yeah. That's it. That's all for the Broncos. We've already talked about what we needed to talk about with them, but there is something seriously wrong with the Falcons. I don't know what it is. I think it might be just Kirk Cousins is starting to fall off. That's what I think. It could be coaching, but it's just yet another year of the Falcons where they have a lot of good weapons, but they're just so underwhelming. And this year they actually have the quarterback. So I just don't know what to tell you here. And, you know, you look at Kirk Cousins.
Top five defense.
Their defense should be better. Their offense is kind of underwhelming. I mean, Kirk Cousins statistically looks fine. He's going to end up throwing for 4,000 yards. He'll end up throwing 25 plus touchdowns. But I guess this is everything that I would have expected out of Kirk Cousins. It's just, for any team, I think you should have higher expectations than just being good. I think you should be trying to be a Super Bowl contending team. And I think as long as Kirk Cousins is your quarterback, you'll never do that. And you have a shiny first-round rookie quarterback sitting there. Your team is struggling. And if you continue to struggle, you're going to be out of playoff contention. I'm just thinking, why not give him a shot? I kind of want to see what Michael Penix can do.
And he already went in for, like, through four passes at the end of the game.
Doesn't count. Give him a start. Let him start a game. Let him be the captain of the ship for one game. I want to see how he does.
Yeah, except they're in the division lead, so I highly doubt it, unless they, like, clinch a playoff berth and win the division, and they would do it, like, week 18. That's, like, the only thing I would see them doing on that note. But I just don't know what to make of this Falcons team. I mean, we have a friend of the podcast named Robert who made a whole video on them that we all pitched in with. That video has aged like milk. And just because I just don't know what it is. But like literally, like what's it going to take? A better quarterback? Maybe. A better coach? I mean, Raheem Morris just has been getting it done. It's clear that he's being kept afloat by talent. Because, like, you just look at the talent on the Falcons. I mean, sure, you got Kirk Cousins, but you got a deadly running back duo with Robinson and Algier. You've got Kyle Pitts, who's finally looking somewhat presentable. You got Drake London, Darnell Mooney. Your O-line's been pretty solid. You got guys like Matt Judon on defense and your defensive backfield with A.J. Terrell, and arguably the best safety duo in name value alone with Jesse Bates and Justin Simmons. And you got Grady Jarrett up front. Like, why? Why are you this bad? There's no reason for it. The only thing I could think of is that Kirk Cousins is being Kirk Cousins and coaching.
And to add on to that, their remaining schedule doesn't look good. So they have the Chargers coming up. They've been playing very good ball. They've been stable. They don't underperform, which is good. That's un-Charger-like. Then they have the Vikings, who have been playing good ball. They have the Raiders, yes. They have the Giants, yes. But then the Commanders as well. So I smell an 8-9, 9-8 season. And for the NFC South, that may be good enough to win the division. But is that what you, like, again, is this your goal? Is this your goal just to be competitive, just to win the NFC South? To win the worst division in football, get outed in the first round, and then just brag that you made the playoffs. I'm sorry, but that's a stupid standard to have. And I know that you're the lowly Atlanta Falcons. You're not that historic of a franchise. You're not known for winning. But I still think you should at least be trying to. Don't just try to sell tickets. And you do have a first-round pick here who during the preseason looked pretty nice. I'd give him a shot if there's any meaningless football to be played, like CJ said, one of those week 18 games where you're resting your starters. Let's say you somehow the bottom really falls out and you just find your way out of playoff contention. Give him a shot. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah. Week 18. Maybe we see it. Maybe we don't. Next team on the top three, the Buffalo Bills. Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills. 30-21 win. They knock off the Chiefs. They finally give the Chiefs their first loss. And it just... Bills are slowly making their case of being a Super Bowl contender again. Josh Allen making his case to be MVP all around. I mean, this is just a big time rivalry game, and they got the job done. I kind of forgot.
Yeah, we heard it
a lot earlier. Next team, Ravens. We talked about them a lot as well. But I guess the big thing, too, is the fact that they lost to a team that only kicked field goals to win. All 18 points came on field goals, and they couldn't even convert the two-point conversion because they were disorganized. So, yeah.
Such a – I can't yeah. – You lose to a team that kicks six field goals, and that's their offense. That's their entire offense. Then yeah, they deserve every bit of their top. They deserve their bottom three nomination. They deserve for their quarterback to be out of the MVP race lead where he had such a large lead for it. I mean, I always thought Josh Allen was a distant second, but now people are having him ahead, and that's something I disagree with right now. But if things continue how they are, then I'm going to be Team Bills and Josh Allen on this.
Yeah. Jeez, CJ, you want to touch on anything about that? Or,
well, we've already, I mean, as far as Buffalo goes, yeah, we've already done this topic to death. But the Ravens, another thing we've just done to death, I'll just give a brief with, yeah, you have, for Buffalo, you weren't the flashiest, but you beat the 9-0 Chiefs, you earn your spot in the top three. And the Ravens, you lost to a team that only kicked field goals. You more than earned a spot in the bottom three.
Yeah,
that is all.
Some honorable mentions, especially for a top three, the Chargers. That, granted, they blew a 21-point lead, but ended up winning 34-27. Herbert looked amazing. Kind of been waiting for a big Justin Herbert game. It wasn't a big Justin Herbert game, but the big story being J.K. Dobbins, 2 touchdowns in the game Sunday night. And hopefully he wins comeback player of the year. But might end up going to Burrow.
It's going to go to Burrow, which, like, I mean, he's having an incredible year, but you have to understand the lore behind running backs who tear their Achilles. They almost never survive it as far as playing career goes. They live, but I mean, the best that you can go with is Deontay Foreman. 900 yards on 224 carries a few years back. If that's the best you can do when telling me that running backs can have good careers after Achilles tears, then that just further supports my argument.
I mean, never mind that, but just all the past injuries that he's had in general, just the worst possible luck that you can think of. And finally finding a new home in LA, and he's going off. He's having a good year, and he's most likely going to hit 1,000 yards.
Yeah. And running backs are, again, they're never the same after Achilles tears. They're almost always out of the league. And if they are, they're just bouncing around as journeymen. Like, remember, look at James Conner. James Robinson. Look at him. He was one of the better running backs in football for a year and a half, tore his Achilles, came back, and he's been bouncing around everywhere ever since. He doesn't play good ball. Cam Akers he's been bouncing around. He's been fine at times. But remember when he was one of the better young running backs for the Rams? And then he tore his Achilles, and then that was all out the window? Like, just look at the Marlon Mack.
Yep.
Tariq Cohen. They're all like they're afterthoughts now because they're out of the league now. And they're not good when they play anymore, which sucks. It's a terrible situation to be in. But as far as modern day medicine goes, they still haven't figured out a counter to the Achilles tear for running backs. Haven't been able to figure that out. That's all the scheduled content we have today that we've covered for an hour and a half. But do we have any other thoughts before we end the show today?
No.
Our boy Douglas has been fine.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's what I was gonna say. I'm fine with it.
And again, we had to axe a lot of topics for this episode because there was just so much to go over. Joe Douglas being fired was one of them. We kind of saw it coming when they fired everyone under the sun who Joe Douglas hired. So that's something to look at. But you know.
Army does wonder how much Rodgers had to do with it.
I'm sure Rodgers did have something to do with it because you look at how they can evaluate quarterbacks. Sam Darnold turned out to be a bust. Zach Wilson, bust. Aaron Rodgers, 2 years too late bringing him on the team. Their offensive line choices have been terrible in drafts and free agency. And their coaching decisions have been bad. Those are three of the biggest factors when it comes to long-term sustained success is quarterback, coach, offensive line. And you butchered all three. So I don't care how good you are at drafting in skill positions and defense if you can't figure out the three most important positions in football. All right. That'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 5. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we will see you on Friday. Over and out.